This is the Valley Outdoors, and we are glad to have you guys with us this week. We've got Don's in the house.
I'm here.
Ava.
I'm here.
And I'm here. Eric, we're here. We're going to have a good show today. I'm excited. We're going to have some cool stories. Dog stranded out in Lake Michigan.
Oh, I hadn't heard about that one yet.
Yeah. And some shed hunting things you might want to know before you go shed hunting again that may or may not get you in trouble. But keep those things in mind. But those are the stories we're going to have today. We want you guys to stick around. We'll be right back right after this. Ashkenam Resort on Ash River in northern Minnesota is a destination you're looking for. Ashkenam offers everything for the angler or family vacation with access to Lake Cabotogama, Namekin Lake, and the gateway to Voyageurs National Park. Thousands of acres of clean, refreshing water all available to you. This is your destination for your next fishing trip or family vacation. Check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. Do I need to say walleyes, northern pike, and crappies? Welcome back, everybody, and it is good to see both of you here.
Sounds good to be here.
Always.
Yeah. Well, as the saying goes, I have a face for radio, so you could probably deal with me here or without me here.
Yeah, we've dealt with you away.
I know. Far and away.
Far and away, yeah.
Well, Don, Ava, this summer, we're going to be out fishing. We always talk about it, but then the schedules get too busy, right? So I was thinking about what's going on. What do you do this time of year to prep, right? So usually what ends up happening is you prep for where you're going to go, at least on the tournament side. Say, okay, we're going to go to Lake Erie, and then we're going to go to Green Bay, or you're going to go to here, there, whatever. Right. But generally, you prepare and start. If there's one technique that takes a little more time to prepare, you make sure you tie up those kinds of rigs. And before the show, we're talking about different tips that you can deal with and tying different rigs.
Right.
And the snell is one of the big questions. And we do have a lot of, I do have a lot of questions when I do seminars at the sports shows. And when do I use this type of snell? And what should I use for the length? And, you know, you have a lot of snells that you go by, and there's about 2 inches between the hooks in a two hook harness.
Right.
And that's about it. Not even, yeah, maybe 2 inches, which is horrible considering how long is a nightcrawler?
Stretched out can be 12 inches.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I just, you know, to preface that a little bit, you know, if you go to the store and you're going to buy a snell, there's so many options out there, the different types of, one, the lengths. It can be 2 foot, 4 foot, 6 foot. There's different line weights. There's different
line types
that you can use. There's two hook harnesses, one hook harness. There's three hook harnesses. Mm-hmm. So what's the right one to use and when?
Well, I think the where you're going to fish, in other words, in the water column, is a big one. So if you're going to fish suspended fish, i.e. Great Lakes type scenarios, sometimes if you're fishing Mille Lacs, what I'll do is I'll opt for a single front hook, and then I'll go with a, if the water clarity is not super clear, I'll go with probably a number 6 treble on the back.
For a crawler?
For a crawler harness.
Okay.
And I'll go with about a 5-inch to 6-inch spread from that single hook when I use an octopus hook. So an octopus hook, and this is, it's important tying a snell. The octopus hook has the curl that comes up, the shank comes back up, and the eye bends back. So when you tie a snell, that line will travel along and stay flat on the back of it so that when the hook is being pulled, it hangs straight. It doesn't hang out at an angle. Then you just simply tie a regular, whatever treble you prefer. I prefer a BMC treble. I just like their way that they sharpen them. They mechanically sharpen them as versus chemically sharpening, which has a smoother finish to it. So it really pulls into the fish more easily and hooks. So that's one of my big things. But so that's open water. Using that type of a spread is important because you can use a bigger crawler for bigger open water. You want a bigger profile. Pretty simple. Spinners can vary. I will say that. For the bigger spinners, you're going to be running the Colorado blade upwards of size 7s, but you have to make sure you expand the number of beads. Usually I go with the 6 or 7 number bead as far as how many on there. Put on the clevis that's a double lock clevis, which is important, so they can't be thrown by the fish. A lot of times you'll have fish that come up and they'll hang on the surface and they'll shake, and they can actually shake that spinner blade right out of the clevis. And spinner blades can make all the difference in the world. If you have the right color and that fish shakes it off, it is the most defeating thing ever. Not only that, you'll have fish that will actually grab the spinner blade. I've pulled them up almost to the boat. They're hanging on the spinner blade and won't let go. So understand those are some key points to it. I use a bigger bead. A lot of times you're not using the 2 or 3, you're using a 4 millimeter bead or a 5 millimeter bead, bigger sizes. And then, of course, work the purples in that side of the fence. And then,
got is there a rule of thumb as far as how many beads? I mean, how do you determine what is the right amount of beads to put on?
You lay the blade out so that you understand where the clevis is going to sit and how the blade is going to lay on that. So you want the blade not or just at the hook head. You don't want it to hang
to the eye, but not over it.
Yeah, you don't want it to go below. It really pulls the fish further up on the hook. Or when they're going to hit it, they will hang and probably hit that area much more readily within the area of that front hook.
There's different types of clevises, too. There's a quick the change metal, clevis, and then there's a metal one. I don't know how they get a metal one off.
Well, that's what there's several metal ones.
Yep.
There's a metal hoop ring where you actually bend it back over and clip it on. But then there's also the regular metal clevis, which I do not go for.
Okay.
And the reason is changing blade type and color is the most important thing to get success. And for you to tie one up and go to the next one, and the next one, and the next one, I don't like. The second thing is the metal on line will have a tendency to wear in the line. And that's not a good thing either. So those two things are important, really, one of those things for me. When you're going closer to the bottom, that you're using bottom bouncers.
Right.
We did up at Ashkenham.
Right.
Using a two-hook harness, that's two single hooks. And again, having the spread is probably 3 inches is important again. And I always, at the end of the crawler, I'll pinch the crawler off. It gives up much more scent that way as well. But you leave it so that maybe there's half, three-quarter inch, something like that, back of the hook. So important again. Generally an open water bottom, you're not using necessarily as big. Again, we're talking non-Great Lake scenarios. And you can use colored hooks. We used chartreuse hooks up there that work really well.
Yeah.
And that was a good thing.
We weren't using Colorado blades, though.
Mm-mm. Nope.
So there are different types of blades out there.
Yep, and that's what I was going to get to. One of the things that's important here, too, the slower speeds that you're moving, you want to have something that's easier to spin. I like using the Max blade. The Max blade is a short blade. It's double prop blade, and it's fiber material. It doesn't drag the bait down, but it gives a great spin. So,
one last question I would have before we run out of time here is, what do you like or prefer for line for making spinners?
Everything will depend on what you're doing. Open water, I'll use fluorocarbon. More often than not, I will, but keep in mind fluorocarbon sinks, so it's all dependent on what kind of fishing you're doing. If you're on the bottom type with a bouncer, just be careful if you have a float. But again, speed is indicative of that. It's going to help.
And weight? What weight line?
What we line 6 to 12 pound, depending on line water clarity. So, tell you what, we'll be right back. More Valley Outdoors coming right up. Well, it's good to have all of you joining us. And one of the other things we'd like to have you join us on would be done.
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Facebook is always a good place, too. We'll be adding a lot more very soon, so keep that in mind. And Michigan, obviously, is one of the places that we have some people listening.
Yeah.
And they recently had an event out there. And not an event as you'd consider an event. Rescue workers in Michigan were able to pull a dog to safety after it became trapped on the ice in the Detroit River.
So it was moving.
Yep. He was heading downstream. The pet had gotten loose from its owner during a walk and ended up becoming stuck in a chunk of ice drifting on the river. The Wyandotte Police Department, little story about Wyandotte. So the favorite worm in jigging down there is called the Wyandotte worm. It's basically a 3-inch brown worm that you run on a jig.
Yeah.
And you just crush the fish. It's kind of, it's one of those local knowledge things. You go there, everybody's trying everything else, but just a regular old brown worm on a chartreuse head, Wyandotte worm.
Where do you get a Wyandotte worm?
Well, where do you think?
In Wyandotte?
Very good.
Okay.
Downriver Tap.
Anyplace else?
Huh?
You ever try them anyplace else?
Yeah, we try them in Red Wing.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. You bring them back?
Can't hey, tell you that, Don.
Oh. You've never shared them with me.
Well,
but that isn't the only thing.
I haven't shared with Don. Ava. Yeah.
He won't even share his boat with me.
So. Nope.
No. There's certain things.
Me neither. So.
You know, yeah. It's like if you open the compartment, it'll say, no, don't look in there. Don't look in there.
Why?
I can't give you all my secrets. So anyway, let me moving right along. The Wyandotte, the police department posted about the rescue on the Facebook page where it credited animal control and firefighters for helping with the rescue. Footage, there is a video on it, shows the worker standing on a ladder partially submerged in the freezing water. He slowly uses a long tool called a catch pole to grab the freezing animal before pulling it to safety. As soon as the dog is within arm's reach, the worker on dry land immediately pulled it out of the water. They said that the poor pooch somehow managed to climb onto the chunk of ice but was drifting away in the river while the dog was freezing. The team was able to move the ice close to the riverbank, and the fire department snagged it with the catch pole. So,
does it say what kind of dog?
I was just going to say, what kind of puppy is this?
I'm sorry, it was a Labradoodle.
Oh.
A Labradoodle? Why didn't they just tell it to come?
Swim.
Swim.
That's what you're meant to do, dog.
That's what my dog would have done.
But I have an odd feeling by that point.
It was cold.
And that dog was probably...
scared.
Hard to move at that point.
Oh.
Very possible.
Well, it had it gotten wet?
Yeah.
Oh, it had, and then it got in the air.
Yeah, I saw the photo of it, and it, yeah, then...
Poor thing.
It was... Okay.
Yeah. Not...
They waited too long.
Yeah, well, what do you do at that point? You know, it makes it difficult if you're on... You know, if you've ever been... If you're watch ice on the river, if you're out steelhead fishing or something like that, and, you know, you got chunks of ice, and you're like, okay, is this one going to hit me or not? And all of a sudden, it's weird currents will pull it back out.
Right.
Same thing holds true with people on Erie.
Sure.
They get stranded on Erie, you don't realize it, and all of a sudden,
you're moving the
wrong
direction.
Time to call 911 and get rescued.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I never have to worry about that.
I was fishing on Superior once, and we drilled ice fishing holes.
Oh, yeah?
Not far from the Sucker River. And we're looking down the hole. You could see, it's spooky because you can see down.
A long way in Superior. Yep.
18, 20 feet.
Right.
You're digging along and digging. And
all of a sudden, the bottom's moving?
No. The hole went away.
Oh.
So it had, ice had floated
it shifted?
Out underneath the hole and closed the hole off. So now I couldn't get my line, I couldn't get my jig back.
There goes your line.
Well, then we start looking on shore. And shore was not like ice tight to shore anymore. It was about a foot and a half away. My buddy and I said, we're out.
Time.
That was one of the last times I ever went on Superior.
Yep.
That's just fishing in Lake Superior in that way. It's just
not. That's the same problem you got in Green Bay and in Michigan.
It's just spooky when you're on Superior because the water clarity is, and it's such a steep drop.
Yep.
You're like, oh boy.
Yep.
It's almost a fear of heights. It's that, it feel like you're.
It's really cool to be out there in a boat, though.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It is.
I mean, you can see boat wrecks down below.
Oh, yeah. On Erie, same thing on the west side of Kelly's Island.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, east side, sorry. East side of Kelly's Island. So, story coming out of Michigan. Michigan gives a lifetime hunting ban to a man over a poaching incident. A Michigan man and officials permanently banned this guy from hunting after he pled guilty to multiple charges relating to a poaching incident from last year. He was also sentenced to a large fine and jail of up to 5 years. I'm not going to say the guy's name. Don't need to do that. But he pled guilty on multiple charges, including one count felony possession of a firearm, one count obtaining a hunting license when he was ineligible, three counts of illegally taking and possessing whitetail. And he's also going to have to pay $25,000 in reimbursements. He will serve 18 months to 5 years in prison. He also ordered to forfeit items, which were 9 illegally taken trophy bucks.
Mm-hmm.
So, the law enforcement division said they're satisfied that this criminal is to be imprisoned for robbing ethical hunters, damaging crops, endangering others, recklessly driving through fields, and shooting deer at night. We hope the serious sentence serves its intended purpose and grateful for a strong message rendered. And the 8 trophy bucks were found in a barn and discovered he was in possession of one other trophy buck as well. So, yeah, that goes down as my book is not a good thing. Last time I checked.
Well, no, I mean, not advised. It's a good thing he's out of the field now for a good long time, rest of his life.
Yeah, it is.
So
it's unfortunate somebody thinks that that's a good idea.
Yeah, well, it's can't imagine what he's doing with them all.
No. Well, he didn't get caught one time, so he did it a second time, and
yeah,
three, four, five,
you're
six,
wasting
seven, eight.
probably a lot of meat if you had him hanging in the barn. That's a lot to. That's a lot to
deal with.
To deal with, yes. Yeah.
Was it all at one time? He had all of those?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! I thought this was like over a long period of time.
No, they found found a significant number.
Wonderful.
Of them, so, yeah, not a good thing. Well, tell you what, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back, and we're going to talk a little bit about shed hunting, do's and don'ts. Stay tuned. More coming up.
For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Well, Donald, lots of things going on in the news. We're going to get to the shed hunting in a minute, but I thought something was kind of stood out that a lot of times there's news stories that people don't get time to research, or they don't get time to get a straight story on what everything is about or a different view.
Okay.
And in this particular case, that would be it. Three things you need to know about President Biden's gun orders that are in place or going to be put into place. And Biden launched his first salvo at curbing gun violence this month, with a slate of 6 executive orders aimed at regulating gun ownership, addressing mass shootings, and installing a new leadership in the Bureau of Tobacco, Alcohol, and Firearms. In the speech announcing the orders, Biden billed gun-related violence as an epidemic, insisted his actions don't infringe on the Second Amendment because no amendment in the Constitution is absolute. He said that the idea that we have so many people dying every day from gun violence in America is a blemish on our character as a nation. Gun rights groups predictably condemn the actions as a targeted attack on lawful gun owners. These actions could require Americans to surrender lawful property, push states to expand confiscation orders, and put a gun control lobbyist to head the ATF. The National Rifle Association had posted on that. They also said that he is dismantling the Second Amendment, and the people should stand up and fight, or at least take notice. Biden has directed the Justice Department to first issue a proposed rule to help stop proliferation of ghost guns. Second, to issue a proposed rule to make clear when a device marketed as a stabilizing brace effectively turns a pistol into a short-barreled rifle, subject to the requirements of the National Firearms Act. And third, to publish a model red flag legislation for states. Now, ghost guns, we had a little conversation off air, refers to firearms without serial numbers that are manufactured at home. For many years, ATF has allowed companies to sell kits that contain all the unregulated firearms parts along with 80% of receivers.
Right. Which, I mean, there are companies that sell just the receivers, and they're called an 80% company. So you still, there's still got a, there has to be some milling done to make them a firearm viable. That's usable.
Yep. So. And again, they're not selling anything that would be unregulated, meaning they're not selling something that's going to be an fully automatic
no.
weapon, nothing that's going to be something that's regulated heavily by any of the laws in place.
It would be illegal. It would be a legal firearm if it had a serial number. Either way,
yeah,
it's not nothing that's illegal.
Stabilizing braces, which is the other part of one of the executive orders, they're originally designed for veterans who'd lost an arm in battle or some other means. They allow an AR-style pistol or similar firearm to be fired with one hand. And they're considered to be pistols, not subject to requirements that govern most short barrel rifles. Right now, Justice Department has 30 to 60 days to publish the details of each proposal, and it's difficult to say how far they will go to restrict ownership of ghost guns and stabilizing braces. And gun safety lobby wants both of them outlawed, and they're not doubting that the Justice Department will toe the party line. The other three orders increase funding of community violence programs, directed the DOJ to issue an annual report on firearms trafficking. And the last order was involving the red flag order and association of purchased assault weapons like ARs and AK-47s. And this is just the start, is a statement that came from Biden. We've got a lot of work to do. Unfortunately, Biden reiterated his support for red flag laws in the latest set of orders, and that was a sharply divided Senate on that, because it can possibly, the supporters say, it can keep someone from harming themselves or others with a firearm, but others worry that it can easily strip someone of the Second Amendment right without due process. And it is a very slippery slope. If somebody doesn't like you and they want to say there's something going on, then they would report it, and that would go down as a red flag law, and then you'd have very strong possibility that that good weapon or any firearms you have would be stripped from you at that point. Spokespersons also talked about the ammo shortage. They will go on. Back in January, they worried with the actions and rhetoric of the Biden administration would intensify the nationwide ammo shortage. And Don, you've experienced that firsthand. It's crazy. And I know a lot of people out there have experienced the same thing.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's getting better. I think if you're looking for some exclusive calibers, it might be a little bit more unlikely that you're going to find them on a shelf somewhere. But you know, your 9mm, 40mm, that your, you know, 226, your 5.56, you're probably going to find those on the shelf now. And I think the prices have become more reasonable in the last month or two. So, but I think people are still pretty cautious about just shooting up too much of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's unfortunate because it's so fun to go to the range and have a good time with that. That's really enjoyable.
Right.
As I say, unfortunate. So. But we'll follow those and see what happens,
yeah,
and keep you guys informed, but just something to keep you enlightened on. So you should keep an eye on that as well. Something else, Don,
yes,
been highlighting since the head of the show, three ways you might be breaking the law by shed hunting.
I didn't know that was possible.
Shed hunting obviously is involving deer and elk and moose, the drop of last fall's antlers. And of course we search long and hard to find them. Three key elements. Number one, fail to register a deadhead. Shed hunt long enough, and you'll find a deadhead, which is a skull of a buck that died, and often before he cast off the antlers. And you must report that. Many states, you need a possession tag to even move that skull. While shed antlers are considered fair game for collectors, antlers connected to skulls are not, and not a good thing. So you must immediately call the DNR if you do find one and notify them of that situation. So
interesting.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Number two, shed hunting out of season. Folks from the Midwest, East, and South, where it's legal to scoop up deer antlers as soon as they drop, might be shocked to learn there's actual shed hunting seasons in many Western states. Well, this might seem like government overreach. The hunting shed hunting seasons are designed to protect wintering animals from harassment by eager shed hunters. And elk and mule, they try to conserve energy during the winter, and by chasing them and looking for antlers in their territory, you're obviously putting them at stress. So pick up an antler before April 30th, and you're out for an innocent hike. Stumble across one, you could face fines up to $137 per antler, loss of 5 preference points on any big game draws you have. So,
ouch.
Yeah, not good there.
That's serious.
And, yeah, that's big. So look at the details and make sure you know where you're hunting and if it's legal in your territory. And last but not least, setting a trap to catch shed antlers. Antler traps are something. I looked it up. And somebody is not nuts if you say that it's true. There are several forms, typically a lattice work of metal rods and bungee cords placed above a baited site. The goal is to shed the antlers from a hungry buck who's looking to eat. And, of course, when they go in, the rack is tangled in the trap, and the deer jerks away from the trap, leaves the antlers behind.
I was going to say it, accidentally going off of your property onto somebody else's property.
It's,
you know, trespassing.
It's a territory. Trespassing is trespassing, but territory, I should say, shed hunting seasonal. It's going to be in an area, so that's going to be the situation. But trespassing is verboten anyway.
Yes.
But
I just thought that would be something like, hey, really make sure you know where you're at.
Yeah, that's good.
I was just going to point out, we've got a guest coming up here in a few weeks or so that's going to add to the story of shed hunting and how cool it can be.
Yep, that'll be pretty awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us. Again, the show goes so fast, it's hard to believe. And we, of course, thank you guys for being with us. Ava, Don, myself, you guys have a great week. We'll see you next week.